everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we were talking yesterday. We said upper 80s. They revised
the forecast.
We're 92 degrees next week.
It could happen Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, and that's record territory. So it's just the heat that won't go away in 2023, I'm telling you.
That heat's got your name written all over it.
It's got my name written. Tim Stellar with me in studio laughing about that. Tim, like myself, is kind of a weather hobbyist.
Yep.
We kind of follow this, and it's just been a crazy year, hasn't it?
But I didn't know about this. They're predicting a 90? I thought we were done
92.
With them.
Nope, we're not done, man. All right. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, November the 3rd, 2023. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We begin our 14th year in January with our radio project, and we'll begin year 36. I came back to town, back to Tucson in 1988, so that will begin the 36th year on TV initially with 22 years and the radio project here in this particular market. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners are TucsonSentinel.com, The Green Valley News, and Soharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group. Their portfolio includes Inside Tucson Business, The Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today on the Buckmaster Show is with Republican Tom Horn, State Superintendent of Schools in Arizona. Over his long career in public service, Mr. Horn served in every branch of government. His first time as State Superintendent of Schools was from 2003 to 2011. Then he was elected State Attorney General. He served in the legislature, was chair of the Academic Accountability Committee. He was a judge pro tem in both Superior Court and the Court of Appeals and served 24 years in the state's third largest school district governing board, 10 years of that as president. With me in studio for our every Friday, we bring in a co-media host and the guest host today, my friend Tim Stellar, 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association Columnist of the Year. Tim, nice to have you with us again.
Hey, thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
And Superintendent Horn, good to be with you again, sir. How are you?
Bill, it's great to be with you. I want to first extend my condolences about your losing your wife. I didn't know about it until I just got your email. But I also lost my wife of 47 years a couple of years ago, so I know what a terribly painful thing is, and my heart is with you, Bill.
Thank you very much. It is extremely painful. We're now, let's see, Ann died August 17th, so we're coming up on that three-month mark. A little bit of little progress here and there, and as you say, you've been there, so you know what I'm going through. All right.
I do, yeah. Let me just tell you, I think grief comes in waves.
Yes.
But the tops of the waves start to decline, and in the long run, you'll find peace.
Well, I've had a little bit, I've had some good days and I've had some bad days. Yesterday, I have to admit, I'm very public about all of this. Yesterday was All Souls Day, and so a lot of grief came back yesterday, but I'm kind of recovering now today. All right. Looking for agreement with you and the Democratic governor, Governor Hobbs, has been a little bit difficult. Appears there is agreement, Superintendent Horn, over the federal COVID relief money for education. I think that's more than $22 million that will continue to flow to Arizona schools. Is that a deal now with the governor?
Yes, that's all taken care of. And I want to say, you know, the fact that we're different parties doesn't mean we can't cooperate. Janet Napolitano was a Democrat and I was Republican in this office. And we got along fine. We met every month to talk about education. She had an initiative for all-day kindergarten. I thought that made sense. And so we went down to the legislature together and made it a bipartisan proposal, and I got Republican votes, and it passed, and we had all-day kindergarten until the recession of 2008. So there's the fact that we're of different parties doesn't mean we can't work together.
How are you working with her right now?
There hasn't been a lot of communication. I'm open to talking to her if she wants to talk to me, but we haven't had a lot of communication. Nothing like the way it was with Napolitano, but hopefully it'll be better in the future.
All right, Superintendent Horn, let's bring my friend Tim Steller of the Star into a conversation. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, that comparison strikes me as interesting. Do you think it's you that's different, or do you think it's these governors that's different in terms of your relationship?
The governors are different. I'm the same that I've always been. I've always been a bipartisan type of person, and even when I was in the legislature, the Arizona Republic 1 year chose me as one of the five best legislators that year, I think partly because I could work with the other side.
Yeah, I don't know your record from that period intimately, but it strikes me that you have been quite partisan as superintendent for the last year in terms of the issues that you've chosen to highlight, even doing ads extolling the virtues of ESA vouchers, which is certainly not what Democrats want, and it is what Republicans want. And that's just one example. I don't know. Do you have a political pressure on you to be more on the side of taking apart the public schools than you used to?
No, I'm totally against taking apart the public schools. I served on the school board, as Bill mentioned, for Arizona's third largest district for 24 years, 10 as its president. I went to public school myself. My four children went to public school and did very well. And I believe that ESAs are good for public schools because competition is better for everyone. That's the reason why the United States was prosperous and the Soviet Union was poor, because we had competition and people work hard to compete, and so they produce a lot and the country's rich. Soviet Union was a government monopoly, and they used to say in Poland, we pretend to work and they pretend to pay us. And with that attitude, you don't produce much and the country is poor. And the same applies to education. I used to do the negotiations with our teachers association, and 1 year they suggested that we eliminate advanced placement courses that did not make, that is, not enough students qualified. And they said that classes were too small and it was not an efficient use of money and we should use it for something else. And I said, if you do that, you lose your best students to the charter schools. And that ended the conversation. I never heard the proposal again. So the fact that you have competition causes you to do a better job at working to get academic excellence, which is what I'm all about. It's my obsession is to improve the academics of the schools, and the more competition you have, the more you're going to try hard. Actually, if a public school is afraid of losing a student to a private school or a charter school, the way to prevent it is to work hard on the academics and produce results that will make the parents happy. So I'm a total public school supporter, public school person. And I believe competition is good for the public schools.
Let me ask you about the financial end of this, Superintendent Horn. Can Arizona afford this school voucher program, or is some contend it's a budget buster?
Yeah, it's not a budget buster. I think that was an error by somebody who works for the governor who said that, because they were only counting the cost of the ESAs, and they weren't adjusting for the money saved if student is it an ESA that would otherwise be in a public school. The cost in the public school is $13,000 per student. The cost of the ESA is $7,200. And the proof of what I'm saying is that if you take all K-12 spending, public, charter, which is also public, and ESA, it's $75 million below budget. So the reason the state has a budget problem has to do with the flat tax and some other things. It has nothing to do with K-12 spending, either public or ESA.
Yeah, so the numbers that I'm looking at here say that we have exceeded by some millions the budgeted amount for ESAs. So it was 600 and I think 30, it was a little over 600 million that was budgeted, and we've spent somewhere in the vicinity of $630 million, I believe, or committed that much. Is that the approximate numbers?
I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I do know this. Those are the gross numbers. Those mm-hmm. do not adjust for the money saved for students that would otherwise be in public school. And, the reasons, for the misunderstanding is that when the bill was passed, it called for my department to report to the legislature the cost of ESAs, and it didn't allow for netting out the savings of students who would otherwise be in public schools. So we reported as we were ordered in the legislation, but it's a misleading number if you allow. And as I say, the proof of it is total K-12 budgeting is $75 million below budget.
Okay, but so if we do have this flat tax, which we do, and it is reducing revenue, and we also have this ESA program that is large and growing, that does inherently put us on a track to have budget problems that are at least in part attributable to the voucher spending, right? If not this year, then next year.
Well, we have budget problems, but they're not attributable to the ESA spending, because in order to have a meaningful number, you have to net out the savings of the cost of the students who are otherwise in public school.
All right, I want to move on to the controversial dual language programs. You have been a staunch proponent of English language immersion instruction. Where are we in that kind of dust-up that's been going on?
We're in the courts, so it'll be up to the courts to decide. But let me just give you a little bit of background. In the year 2000, the voters overwhelmingly passed an initiative that required English language learners to be instructed English immersion and not in bilingual education. My two predecessors did not enforce it. I was the first one to enforce it. Prior to my doing that, one of my predecessors, you might remember, is Lisa Graham Keegan.
Of course.
And she reported to the legislature that the rate of students becoming proficient in 1 year under the bilingual programs then prevalent was 4%. That's pathetically low. At that rate, almost nobody ever becomes proficient, and they fail in the economy. I introduced structured English immersion. We got the rate up to 31%. At 31%, in 3 or 4 years, everyone becomes proficient. So we demonstrated that structured English immersion is much better academically for the students, and those who advocate for dual language are doing so because of ideology, not because of concern for the academic performance of the students.
But wait a minute, you're talking about a program that was measured in your previous term, right? You're talking about Lisa Graham Keegan talking about 4%. This is completely different program as far as I know. It was approved by the State Board of Education in 2019, I believe.
So, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so
I have recent statistics. I have recent statistics also. What my research department did was they took the top five schools that had structured English immersion, and they took the top five schools that had dual language, and they compared them, the first against the first, the second against the second, and so on. And the structured English immersion programs were three times better in the percentage of students that became proficient in English in 1 year than the ones that had dual language. And it makes sense, because if you spend half the school day learning English, and the rest of the day you're being taught in Spanish, you're not going to learn English as fast as if you're taught in English all of the school day. There was a professor in the Midwest who did a federally funded time on task study, and he concluded that the more times a student spent learning something, the more the student learned. And his mother said, "You needed a federally funded study to tell you that."
But you were just talking about what happened over 1 year. But of course, you wouldn't expect a student in dual language to achieve English proficiency or fluency in 1 year. That would be
of
a long-term proposition, right? So it strikes me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is what you're balancing is in the dual language programs, you're taking longer to become fluent in English, but you're learning other academic subjects along the way, whereas in the, and then you're over the long term, theoretically, you're learning English and you've made progress in these other academic subjects, whereas in the English immersion, you're not making much progress in the other academic subjects, but you are getting proficient in English right away. So isn't it just a trade-off, short-term versus long-term fluency?
Yeah, that was a very good description of a very interesting problem. That's true. There is a trade-off. And it's a much-studied subject. And I would refer you to a publication called Education Next. You can get it at educationnext.org. It has two N's in the middle, educationnext.org. And look up a study by Joseph Guzman, which was a meta-study, a big study of the differences. And he found that students who had been in structured English immersion, out in the long run, performed out students that had been in bilingual in everything he studied. That was graduation from high school, average income, admission to college. And in admission to high-status professions, the students who had been in structured English immersion outperformed the students who had been in bilingual by better than 2-1. So that's the results of the studies. The other point to make, though, is we need to follow the law. It's illegal to violate a voter-passed initiative, and nobody could overrule that. The legislature can't, the attorney general can't, I can't. We're obligated to follow voter-passed initiatives, and that's why I had the pleasure of suing the governor and the attorney general on this issue, and it's now in the courts.
All right, we're going to pause right here, Superintendent Horn, and talk about my favorite bakery in town. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. Yeah, you could use something like that right now, couldn't you, Tom? Some kind of comfort food.
Well, I'm trying to lose weight, so I'm afraid unless she's got something that's sugar free, I can't do it.
Well, I don't know if Steve and the team actually have anything sugar free up at Mona's northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are taking orders now for the Thanksgiving for your pie choice, what kind of dinner rolls you want. So Thanksgiving, we're less than 3 weeks away. Open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 in the morning. Their website's Mona's Danish Bakery.com. More with Tom Horn right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today with the State Superintendent of Schools. Tom Horn is on our live line, and our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now to our interview with Superintendent Tom Horn. The news coming out about math scores is very troubling, Superintendent Horn, and it's not just in the high school level, but it's incoming freshmen in this state as well. Some of your thoughts.
Well, this is with respect to math and reading as well, and writing and history, science, the arts. This is why I ran. When I announced I was running again after having been back in private practice of law, my friends came to me and said, "Tom, you're crazy. It's a huge drop in income, and you're going backwards. You were the attorney general, now you're running for superintendent of schools again." I said, "The big problems in our schools, and that's what I absolutely have to work on. And that is, as I mentioned, my obsession is to get our academic scores up and to get a focus on academics." By the way, the first time I said that in a speech, my wife said, I thought I was your obsession. I said, "Yes, darling. In my private life, you're my obsession, but in my professional life, my obsession is to raise the academics because the test scores are not good." My predecessor focused on all kinds of things other than academics. There were distractions from academics. My crusade is to get, I say that as a Jewish person, my crusade is to get the focus back on academics.
And and your 1 year in office, are we seeing any progress or no?
Well, the exams were last April, so we had only been in office for 4 months, so that would have been too soon.
Okay.
But with time, I think you will see results. You will see results.
Here's Tim Steller, the Arizona Daily Star. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make. I'm not quite sure how to square these two things. One is that your obsession is with results and academics. It's possible I'm missing things that you're doing, but what I mostly hear coming out of your office relates to, for example, the transgender issue and things like that that are not like core. They may be significant to some people, but they're truly not core issues in education, I don't think. I should ask you two-parter about that. One is just, where are we at in terms of the question of trans biological boys who identify as girls competing in in girls athletics? I believe that's in the courts, right? You've tried to stop that, but it's been challenged successfully so far, right?
That's a bit of a simplification. I'll give you more of an explanation.
Sure.
Go ahead and ask your second question, and I'll go into detail
about
that.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't understand why, if your big concern and your obsession, as you put it, is results on scores, why you would spend time on issues like this.
Okay, well, as a journalist, please don't take this personally, but the media like to focus on controversy. It makes better reading. But if you look at my efforts, 90% of my efforts at least are aimed toward improving our academics. We have started school improvement teams. When I took office, I got an email from a consultant who specialized in failing schools, and he said that the schools have not had any help for many years they've just been judged, but they haven't been getting any help from the Department of Education. Well, so I revived what I had done the last time I was in office, which is to form school improvement teams to go out and help the schools. The first part of my mission statement, I have a three-part mission statement. The Department of Education is a service organization dedicated to raising academic outcomes and empower parents. So the very first part of our mission statement is to get out there and help the schools do better. And we have a tremendous effort going on to do that. We have a lot of other efforts. I've just dedicated $50 million to free tutoring for students who did not test proficient. I think that'll make a big difference. That is the thrust of what we're doing. Now, there are other things that come up that I have to deal with, and that's what the media choose to focus on. So let's talk about biological males competing against girls in sports. The newspapers have been full for some years now of stories about girls who are very dedicated to their sports. They work really hard. They have dreams of making the varsity or maybe getting a college scholarship or the Olympics. And they're doing really well until they have to fight against a biological male, and they can't do it because biological males have bigger muscles, bigger bone structure, and so on. And they're devastated. Their dreams are shattered. And I'm wondering why we don't hear more about sympathy for the girls that this is happening to. I think it's absolutely insane to allow biological boys to compete in girls' sports. It's contrary to Title IX, which was created especially to be sure that we had separate girls' sports where girls could compete and could excel. And that's being destroyed now by this movement to have biological boys compete in girls' sports. At the University of Pennsylvania, they have a guy who was ranked 455th in the nation when he competed against guys. Now that he's competing against girls, he's winning all the championships, and the girls are being deprived of championships that they should be entitled to because they should just be competing against girls, which is the whole idea of Title IX. I have every sympathy with people who feel they were born into the wrong body. I'm not against transsexuals at all, but biological boys should not be competing against girls in sports. The Arizona legislature passed a bill to say that. The lawsuit was brought by two big New York law firms to declare it unconstitutional. There were four defendants named. Three of them conceded to the plaintiffs. I'm the only one of the defendants that's defending it, and I'm dedicated to bring it to the U.S. Supreme Court to be sure that girls are able to compete and excel in their sports as Title IX provides.
And so, as I recall, it's maybe I'm getting confused. Is there not a separate lawsuit on the part of a couple of Tucson area youths who are challenging your policy? Because I think
The lawsuit was to challenge the bill that was passed by the legislature. One of the plaintiffs is in Tucson. One is in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. All the other parties are in Phoenix, including the local lawyer. But they filed in Tucson because, as we all know, judges are more liberal in Tucson. But the lawsuit was to challenge the constitutionality of the law, and you know it's the duty of the Attorney General to defend state laws as well as to represent departments of government, and she has refused to defend this law, claiming she has a conflict, which she does not have. A conflict is when you've represented one of the parties. But the fact that you disagree with the policy is not a conflict. When I was Attorney General, I defended a lot of laws I didn't agree with because I thought that was my duty, and it should be her duty, and she's refused to do her duty. So the legislature appropriates money to the Attorney General to take care of lawsuits and to me to help our schools, and I've had to use education money to defend this lawsuit because the Attorney General refuses to do her duty.
All right, Arizona Superintendent of Schools Tom Horn is our Friday Focus interview. Let's get an update. We've talked with you in previous sessions about this hotline that folks can call to report an issue at school. You've said on the program that, I don't know, did you say 90% of the calls were crank calls? Is that, it was that high, wasn't it?
I don't remember the exact number, but there was a concerted effort because in Virginia they got so many crank calls that they gave up and they closed down the line. I have a little more tenacity than they had in Virginia, and I just ignore the crank calls and we just deal with the genuine ones. And as I've learned to do, because I get a lot of hate mail that I just ignore as well. I only answered one, and that was from somebody who said that I should be in a retirement home rather than being superintendent of schools. And so I responded to her that normally I don't respond to hate mail, but I was making an exception in her case because at least she was funny. the most interesting email we got on the hotline was not from a parent, but from a teacher who was objecting to professional development that she was getting at the Mesa School District. And she sent us a picture of a visual that said explicitly that the United States was a white supremacist country. So I called over there, and that professional development is no longer going on. So I think the hotline has been very helpful. What happened, it's very interesting because something happened during COVID, a silver lining in the cloud of COVID, which is there was teaching online and parents could see what their students were learning. And a lot of them were really outraged at what they were seeing. And they would go to school board meetings and they weren't always treated politely at the school board meetings. And so by establishing the hotline, I gave them a way to communicate when they're upset about what's going on in their school. So I think they have every right to that.
This is an interesting point because I find this is what I'm trying to distinguish between your current term and your past term. Now, granted, you did go after Mexican-American studies here in Tucson, so you went after some similar issues. But it strikes me that in this term, you are responding to that movement. That is, you appealed to in your campaign and in your performance so far, are responding to that movement that emerged during the COVID period. It always strikes me, though, that granted you won, so by 0 point, I think, less than a percentage point margin, but it strikes me that this is a pretty small minoritarian movement, this Purple for Parents and other related groups, and I don't get why you would appeal so strongly to them when this is not the bulk of the parents out there. This is a relatively unrepresentative minority.
Purple for Parents worked very hard against me in the primary, so I wouldn't confuse.
Okay, let's. Yeah, I may be naming the wrong group, but I'm talking about the right movement. Moms for Liberty.
I think they recognize that I'm a reasonable person. I'm not an extremist in any way. Now, with respect to responding to groups, I only deal with issues that I feel passionately about. Mm-hmm. I feel personally passionately about the issue we just discussed about that boys should not compete against girls. I felt that way ever since Renee Richards. I don't know if you remember Renee Richards. This is at least 20 or 30 years ago, a tennis player who wanted to play in the women's league, and they didn't want him, and a stupid judge forced them to take him. Even then, I was outraged by that. I thought it was very unfair to the women who want to compete, and then all of a sudden they have to compete against a male. So I'm not appealing to any groups in particular. On the contrary, some of those that you're thinking about opposed me in the primary.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me give you a specific example. Yeah. You spoke to Moms for Liberty, which is, they could be honestly classified as a somewhat right-wing parental group. You said something about Chandler Unified School District eliminating AP math courses and instituting equity math, and that's been looked into. That's not true. It feels to me like the kind of thing where you're going along with a bandwagon on these issues when the accusations may not even be based in reality.
I never go along with bandwagons. I used to get in trouble with the legislature because I thought for myself, and if I thought the Democrats were right, I voted with them.
So why did you say that Chandler was eliminating its AP math courses?
I'll get to that. Let me finish the sentence. You know, one year the Arizona Republic chose me as one of the five best legislators out of 90 in the legislature because of the fact that I always thought for myself. I never followed anybody. As I mentioned, I can make a much better income in the private practice of law, so I wouldn't give that up in order to follow other people. I do it in order to do what I think is right. As far as Chandler goes, this was a major issue in meeting after meeting of the school board, where parents were complaining about math that it was called reasonable math, where you didn't have to come up with the right answer. The idea was that if they thought you used the right method, but you came up with the wrong answer, they counted as the right answer. In China, they're making the kids come up with the right answer. And if we're going to compete internationally, we need not to not have this kind of soft approach to academics that of all the things that are studied, math is the one thing where there's definite right and wrong, and they're counting wrong answers as right. And the parents were upset about it. They were going to meeting after meeting, and I'm upset about it. And they're going to lose those parents to charter schools and ESAs because they do have a choice now, and they don't want their kids going to a school that counts wrong answers as right. Then the other issue was they have schools that are supposed to be high academic schools that challenge the kids that could handle it at a higher level than the other schools, which I think is very important for us to develop our gifted kids. And they've abandoned that, and they're now teaching the same curriculum in those schools. And the parents were complaining bitterly about that, and they're going to leave as well. I can keep talking about Chandra with you, but you may want to talk about it.
We're going to have to wrap it up, Superintendent Horn. Any final thoughts before we let you go?
Yes, I would just say, if you want to know what I'm about academic rigor. I'm against distractions from academics, which my predecessor emphasized. And it had resonance in the public. The four Republicans above me all lost. I beat an incumbent. It was the first time that happened in 50 years that an incumbent was defeated in a general election, a statewide incumbent was defeated in a general election. Because what I had to say, one of you said something about I only appeal to a small group. The public wants rigor in their schools. They don't want the distractions. They don't want biological boys playing in girls' sports. They want decency in their schools. And they want academic results, and I'm devoted to academic results, and that's why I was totally contrary to the trend. It was a huge Democrat year last year, and the four people above me all lost. I won because my emphasis on academics has resonance among all people, regardless of whether the Republicans or Democrats are independent. They want academic rigor for their kids in the schools, and that's what I'm bringing.
All right, Superintendent Horn, good talking with you again, sir.
Great talking with you, both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much. Tom Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Schools. We'll pause right here. Tim Steller is with me. I want to talk with Tim about something that's dear to all of our hearts. When you get behind the wheel in this town, be careful. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our thanks to our Friday Focus interview today with Superintendent of Schools Tom Horn and Tim Steller joining me in the questioning.
Yeah, that was an interesting interview. You know, it's always kind of a throwback to talk with Tom Horn because I challenged him a lot there, and these days, most politicians, or especially I find on the far right, they will attack you or attack the press as a kind of reflex or defense mechanism. And it's fun to go back and forth with him on those issues. And I also think I think he's probably right in to some degree in his analysis of his victory, which is that there is an appeal to the simplicity of focusing on academic rigor. I don't know if I believe him in the degree to which he's doing that. That is, I think there's a lot of culture war distractions creeping in, but maybe he would argue that, you know, he is trying to get rid of those distractions, such as transgender athletes in sports, in order to focus on academics. Anyway, interesting interview.
I want to talk to you about your column last Sunday. It is a very dangerous place, Tucson, when you get behind the wheel, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. Yeah, as I said, people worry a lot about violence or property crime or other safety issues. But probably the most dangerous thing that any of us does on a day-to-day basis is drive. There's been another wave of deaths on Tucson streets this year, as there has been in previous years. Last year, it was mostly, the plurality of the deaths were among pedestrians, many of whom were on methamphetamine or fentanyl, not to excuse the driver who struck them, but that could play a role in many of the cases. This year, the plurality of people who've died on Tucson streets are drivers. 34 out of 80 some have been drivers or passengers in vehicles, and 18 or 19, I think, as of today, were on motorcycles. So it's a massive death toll that we kind of just see as a drumbeat occurring day after day.
If you do not wait when you get the green arrow, if you do not wait, say, 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, basically that's what I'm doing, If you don't do that, your chances are you are going to be hit by somebody running a red light. It happened to me this morning. Someone went through a red light after the 3 seconds, a full 3 seconds.
Wow.
In a truck, just speeding along. Right over here, I was turning on Palo Verde.
Yeah.
And so it is so dangerous out there.
Yeah, it was already getting more dangerous in the last 10 to 12 years. Not just here, but nationwide, there seems to be some connection to the distraction of phones and that sort of thing, although that's not thoroughly established. There's a variety of factors. But then the last few years since the pandemic began and there was the social uproar over George Floyd's killing, there's been a real surge. And part of that is police pulling back from doing traffic stops. First of all, there's fewer police. A lot of them left because of everything that was going on. And then traffic stops are a flashpoint. As the chief said to me, you know, no one wants to be the next one on CNN with his, you know, body cam footage.
Yeah.
And so, but the chief Kazmar did say that he thinks he has to an extent corrected that, tendency, at least in the TPD, he reestablished the motorcycle unit as a unit strictly dedicated to traffic enforcement. So there is an increase in enforcement, but it's not huge yet.
Was it a safer city with the red light cameras?
And I think undoubtedly so. There were some incidents in which the cameras were causing confusion, and confusion can cause problems, including collisions. But overall, you know, it gave people pause. And right now, there's just no concern on people. You know, people are driving around thinking no one's ever going to catch them.
Mm-hmm. What do you have planned for the weekend?
Oh, I've been working on a couple different things. But right now, I've been spending the morning going over the transcripts of the discussions that led to Proposition 413, the proposed pay increase for the mayor and council. Mm-hmm. Really interesting how they arrived at this. They had the commission that's assigned to do this had a more modest plan that they were pursuing, and then they changed at the last minute. And how and why they changed, I think, is pretty interesting and probably dooms the thing, but so it goes.
That seems to be the marquee issue. There's been very little interest in the other races.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether to, you know, whether it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that we consider most of the races to be done before they're actually voted on. And so therefore, maybe some people don't vote or get excited about discussing the races. But Prop 4, you know, people can relate to how much a person makes per year.
Yes, of course.
You know, it's a really simple calculation. You compare it to your own intake and wonder what that should be.
All right, Tim Stiller, thank you very much. We will catch you down the road. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Bill.
Take a break right here. Weekend Watch is next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where it's about 70 degrees. That's good for me, I'll tell you. Good hiking weather over in Silver City. Only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful weekend destination. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for all sorts of tempting activities, great places to stay, and some great places to dine as well in historic Silver City. Dan Gibson is with us for Weekend Watch this week. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. What's going on this weekend? Looks like there's a lot of activity.
There certainly is. It is the kickoff Saturday, November 4th, is the kickoff of 10 West, which is sort of a little bit of a Tucson riff on the sort of South by Southwest idea that you bring in all these sort of multifaceted things that are based around creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship. That'll mostly, the big part of that is Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there's events at the TCC, which are focused on those different areas. However, you can kick that all off. You don't have to be creative at all. I mean, I don't think myself is that way. You can just go to the 10 West Street Fest, which is at 6th Avenue and 7th Street. That's basically most of the day tomorrow. That'll include live music. It'll have food. There's a block painting party at 7th Street and 5th Avenue. There's live music at Royal Room, at Tap and Bottle, at Corbett's, and then a main stage as well with featuring DJs, live music from groups like the Carnival Arrows. Nailed that one. And a galactic glam fashion show at 5:30. I have no idea what that means. I am not usually invited to anything with the word fashion, but it does sound like a pretty good time. It features special guest DJ Lunar Flux with two
what?
X's. I don't know what that means. I am too old for anything called Lunar Flux, but nonetheless.
An out-of-this-world fashion show. How's that?
Exactly. A dozen local designers, and the theme is galactic glam. I didn't know if did they ask you to work the runway for that, or are you doing a little strut and pose?
I think I have other plans for
okay,
that one.
I've
got time for a couple more, Dan Gibson.
Well, it's homecoming weekend. There are still apparently tickets left for the U of A UCLA game this Saturday, which is a little mystifying, right? Because it's homecoming.
Yeah, yeah.
U of A is doing well. You'd think that would be sold out. So get your tickets for that if you can. But also, if you are trying to think of stuff to do tomorrow, they're having a homecoming special. It's the Flandreau Science Center and Planetarium. Tickets for shows or exhibits are just $5 a person, which is a heck of a deal. There's a show at 12:30 called Perfect Little Planet for Kids. 6:30 touring the solar system. I think there probably isn't even a laser light show in there too. You know, catch it all. But if you haven't been to Flandreau in a little bit, it's a heck of a good time. They're open until 8 p.m. Two floors of exhibits and the full dome adventures in the planetarium.
Yeah, you would think that the stadium would be packed for homecoming and a team that is really, really looking good and should be rated really in the top 20 or 25. So it is a little bit mystifying.
A little bit.
Yeah. What else, Dan?
Well, also tomorrow, I'm packing it out for Saturday. You're going to figure out a way to fit all this stuff in your schedule. But the lovely and delightful Mission Garden is having herbalist Donna Chesner will be leading a walk through their medicinal garden, which will teach you about herbs native to the greater Southwest area, many of them local specific to the Tucson area, and how herbalists use those to promote good health. You just meet at the garden's front gate. You purchase a ticket, which I think is like $5 or something like that. It's really affordable. And so it's a nice way to see Mission Garden. It's going to be lovely out, I assume. I don't really believe in the weather, but I'm just believing that it's going to be lovely out. And Mission Garden is a great place, and you get to get a touch of like what the sort of history of this area and what people were using to heal themselves before, you know, medicine and traditional medicine hospitals and all that.
We had Janos on the show on Monday. He was talking very highly about Mission Gardens and how he is one of his sources for some great, great stuff.
It's truly one of my favorite places in Tucson, I will say.
All right, Dan Gibson, always a pleasure. Dan, have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
All right, The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content. Have a great weekend, everybody.